this is Ryan Roten from the Brand New You Podcast. You're listening to the Steve Stewart on the Money Plan SOS Podcast, helping everyday Americans to pay attention, not interest.
Welcome back, Debt Freedom Fighters. It's your humble servant and personal finance architect, Steve Stewart, who hates your debt more than you. In this episode of the Money Plan SOS podcast, we're going to have a conversation with financial coach Kai Yanez. We talk about hiring companies that pull credit reports, whose responsibility it is to teach financial literacy to Americans, and splaving. We'll also talk about my irrational smartphone addiction, and I once again get judgmental towards those who spend more time on their credit cards than their budget in the Panda from the Honda segment. All of that here in the 192nd episode of the Money Plan SOS podcast. Today, I'm going to bring on a financial coach. Her name is Kai Yanez. She is from thevaultkey.com. Welcome to the show, Kai.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Tell us really quickly how long you've been doing one-on-one coaching with people.
Well, I've had my business, The Vault Key, for 3 years now, a little over 3 years. And I actually went full-time focus on my business just only a few months ago because I had such a passion for what I was doing and liked it so much that I wanted to dedicate, you know, my full-time focus on it instead of my day job.
See, there's another thing we have in common. I love it. What you've seen with the clients you've been working with for at least as part-time and probably even more recently is, you know, how Americans allow themselves to get into debt so easily. Can you speak on that for a moment?
Absolutely. I remember, it's more of an anecdote for someone else, but when I was leaving my past job, one of the people asked me what I was going to be doing. And I told her, I said, I'm going to be doing financial coaching, helping people budget and save money and learn overall financial literacy. And she said, she's like, I have neighbors and they're in debt and they have a boat and they don't care. Like, they just don't care that they're in debt. I paused because I wasn't really sure what to say to that. But, you know, that really is a lot of the issue, I think, is just that people are in debt. And I think so many people don't care unless they're forced to care.
Are we the ones who are screaming about it because we found the benefits and nobody else is willing to look at it that way? Do you think that they don't care just because they don't know, or are we just over the top, crazy, get out of debt people?
I think it's a combination of both. I think that it has a lot to do with people's environment, their home life. I mean, with my story is that I grew up from grandparents who lived during the Depression age. And my mother was a single mother with two daughters and was trying to make ends meet, trying to get her business off the ground. And I just learned about frugality at a young age and learned about saving and kind of learned the value of a dollar by, you know, working to pay off a car, pay off car insurance. You know, I didn't have a lot of things handed to me because we didn't really have the money to do it. And then you have the opposite end of the spectrum with my husband, where his family spends a lot of money, some of it that they don't have. And, you know, him and his brother, they had a lot of things available to them as children, as well as teenagers that, you know, I didn't really have that. So I think it's just also your home life and, you know, that upbringing.
Well, I definitely think there's something about the upbringing, but I think a lot of people's lifetime experiences will also change the way that they look. That's what I've experienced for the most part, because when I first got married, you know, my wife drew up a budget and I could care less. And now the tables have turned, and it's just because I've found that there's a benefit to a debt-free lifestyle. And some people may never give up their credit cards. They may never stop buying a car on payments. They're obviously going to get by, but you've seen where debt affects lives. It affects the way that people live. They may not realize it. And, you know, to what extent, I guess we could debate on how bad it could be or how great it could be if they got out of debt. But, you know, what are those things that you're seeing, those opportunities or those things that people are missing out on because they're still living that American lifestyle with the payments?
What I see is I see people that are being affected by trying to buy a home. You know, that they're getting charged a higher interest rate because they have a lot of debt, or they're being denied a home loan altogether. They want to buy a nice car, but once again, they have a high interest rate they have to deal with. And especially also getting a job. I used to work in staffing. That was my previous job. And I worked in the compliance department. And one thing I looked at was background checks. Through the background checks, certain firms ran their credit history. And if there were certain things that were flagged that if they had it on there, such as student loan collections or over $10,000 in liens, they would actually deny them the job. So I was seeing this first and foremost contractors that were thinking they were going to have a job offer, running their background check, and that wasn't the case.
That's an important thing. I want to ask you, since you were in the field there where you were actually trying to help people get hired, I hear a lot of the time people say, oh, I have to have a great credit score because an employer is going to check my credit score. And that's not true. And you're proof of that, right? They didn't look at the score. They looked at the credit report. Is that true?
Yes, that's the case. I think that it's – I don't know how many firms really have that other than like banks, automobile insurance. But yeah, no, they really only just looked at credit history, and every single firm was different. The contractor didn't know what that limit was because it was only through the end client that knew what they were basing it on.
We're talking about temporary staffing. Is that who the person was that you were serving to bring in people in, or job placement?
Oh, right. It was job placement. It could either be temporary or direct hire.
And so the employer would ask that they were able to get permission from the applicant, I guess you'd say, to take a look at their credit report, which is going to reflect anything that was either not paid on time, or outstanding debts, I guess, is the debt load would be showing there.
Correct. Right. And it wasn't just the banking clients that we had that did this. It was other ones, industries with education, with energy. I mean, there were quite a few of them that even surprised me that ran a credit report. So from what I know and from what I've been seeing, more and more industries are running credit reports for people to get a job. And I think one of it is the weed out system, so that way they're getting the best candidates. And I think it's just also having awareness on debt and, you know, what it's doing to our economy,
right, and to
consumers.
Now, let's go back one more time. I'm going to keep talking about credit report versus credit score when you're talking about employment, because that's a big thing for me right now is to hear about this all the time. Do you remember anyone ever being denied a position because they didn't have, well, they didn't have a credit score? So I guess that's not a really a valid question. Did anybody not get hired because they didn't have anything on their credit report?
Well, that was a flag as well. That would come back. My position was human resources. So I looked at background checks, but that was really went funneled through like the actual background team that we had to help give me some clarification on anything I saw that came up. So they would see a flag if they didn't have any credit history because they were too young or they just haven't had any credit cards in their lifetime. That was actually waived. That was an understanding that, okay, they didn't have any type of credit history and that was okay. So no, they were not denied because they didn't have credit history.
Great. I think that's the way to go anyway.
Right.
All right. So you've seen how debt affects people in their lives. You've been coaching people for a few years. We probably need to talk about this as well. As you mentioned, becoming a financial coach and talking about financial literacy. And I remember a report, I think it was actually in Freakonomics, whether it was one of their episodes or I think it might actually be part of their book. But they had a study where somebody showed that financial literacy didn't really help. In fact, the cost of putting financial literacy classes in place, the ROI, the return on investment, wasn't there. Where do you stand on that?
You know, I think I've actually read similar articles stating the same thing. And I mean, it's really hard to say. I'm not part of that time where they are putting financial literacy classes in schools. But like, I agree with what you said earlier, that it really can also be based on how you're observing things. You know, like just like with you, my husband was not really the most financially sound person. And now he has the savings, he has no debt, and he's really doing great financially. And he really has learned a lot about financial literacy. I don't know. I think that with young kids, I think if it's their upbringing, then they may be interested in it. But I think you really have to go through real life experiences in order to really understand that. You know, I'm not saying that I was, when I was younger, that I was really great with money myself. I had to kind of learn that as well from observing and then just being in the real world. So, you know, I think there may be some truth to that, but it's also too early to tell. We've really only been focusing on financial literacy for a couple of years in schools.
Do you think it's up to the schools to teach or is it, we shouldn't even worry about the schools teaching? The ROI isn't there. So we should be doing it ourselves as parents?
Yes, I do. I think that that's how it first starts. And, you know, and then child could either become really even better with money as they get older and go in the real world and start making some money, or they go in the real world and they still spend money they don't have and they get in debt. So I think it does still first come down to the parents.
Yeah, I wish we could find a happy balance. So I do think that there's some kind of a happy medium between parents teaching their kids, but then there being something represented in our education system. What the happy medium is there, I don't know. But I don't think it should be left up to the parent alone, because as we've seen, the parents don't always get it. So we'll just be repeating the same thing over and over through history, I guess we could say, if we don't get that education to the person who could use it. And I also completely agree with what you said, that we got to let the kids, you know, do things and experience money themselves. And, you know, I'll give you an example. My daughter bought something from the dollar store. You know, this is a story. Actually, I'll go a little bit deeper. She bought something from a store. It was like a stuffed animal. And she bought it. It was like $20. But a couple of weeks later, she didn't care about it anymore. And she kind of wanted that $20 back. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it was buyer's remorse, because she liked it for a couple of weeks. But when you take that opportunity cost and you see that, okay, I bought this thing, but it really isn't a lasting good. It really wasn't a use asset or anything like that, which kids don't understand that. But, you know, I think those are the lessons that they need to learn. And definitely buying things at the dollar store. I don't know if you've bought anything from the dollar store that's lasted more than a couple of months. I have not. But sometimes buying things that are cheap, just, you know, that's not the right decision. We talk about frugality. We talk about saving money. But I think frugality has been mistaken, and people think, oh, we have to get the best deal on everything, pinching pennies and buying the cheapest things out there. Do you agree with that at all?
To a certain extent. I mean, it depends on what it is. And, you know, I just wrote a blog about that called The Five Dangers of Buying Cheap. And, you know, I am a very frugal person. I mean, I like finding deals. I like making money work for me and getting the best value out of my dollar. But it's also, I've learned from experience, from the things I've bought, that sometimes frugality is not really the best thing to do. I mean, it really is also quality that does measure on that. I mean, I'll buy clothes from, you know, I love Target. I do love Target, but I'll buy clothes from Target, just very casual t-shirts. But I wouldn't go there and buy anything that I'm expecting to last, because it won't. And I do try to spend, for anything that's professional, try to buy more quality clothing that I can wear for years to come. And I still am wearing them. Story of my Mac is that I bought PCs through the years for $600, $700. And they've broken down on me. They've either just keep freezing, or they giving me issues only after 2 years. And my MacBook, I just decided to go ahead and spend more money because it was a better product to me. And it was hard. It was hard to fork over the money to do it. But ultimately, I'm really enjoying it. And so I think it really depends on, you know, what you're looking for, what you want to buy.
I can attest to the Mac as well. I held off on buying a Mac for a long time for, I think, the same reason, which was it's almost twice as much as a regular PC. But boy, I had a MacBook Pro. It's still sitting here next to me. It's a spring 2010 model, and the thing still works really well. It just doesn't do enough of what I want it to do with all the video editing and things I'm doing. So now I've got another Mac. But it certainly lasted longer than any of the Dells that I was using, and stronger for the longest period of time. So you believe in buying quality over the savings of buying cheap or convenience. What are some of the other things that you found that we shouldn't go cheap on, or shouldn't be too frugal on?
Preventive maintenance on vehicle. You know, it's hard when you have to get an oil change every 3 months. You know, that adds up. You know, it could be 30 here, 50 here. That adds up. But ultimately, you have to take care of your car, and you have, you know, you really should do the routine maintenance, because if you don't, I could attest to this, your engine may die, or two tires may blow up, and now you're stuck having to get two new tires when you weren't really planning for that. So I think when the mechanic says, to an extent, hey, you know, this work needs to be done in your car, we should probably listen to them more often, because you need your vehicle and you don't want to buy a new one, and you don't want to buy a new engine because there are thousands of dollars. And other things is, I really try not to buy in bulk. I've had unpleasant experiences with buying in bulk. So I just really just try to buy what I need and just use it all. That way I'm not feeling like I'm wasting anything, or feeling like I hate the purchase that I made because now I'm stuck with it for 6 months. And just buying really good quality foods, just spending more to eat healthier. You know, I don't really try to buy that many processed foods because I don't feel as good when I eat that way. And I just, you know, want to buy better produce, fresh meat that is going to last, you know, that's a better quality and actually last longer.
Well, Kai, I just pulled up your blog post and I can see here the five dangers of buying cheap. The number five, I guess it's not a typo. It says splaving is mm-hmm. not the same as saving. What is splaving?
Okay, so I got that term from my sister. My sister lives in Orlando, and when I used to live near her, we would go shopping all the time. And we loved to go shopping for shoes, and our favorite shoe store would send us a coupon. And it says, oh, you can save $10 if you buy a pair of shoes. So we would go buy some shoes. Well, the reason that she coined it splaving is because if we didn't have that rewards coupon, we wouldn't have even bought the shoes in the first place. So here we are spending, mm-hmm. you know, money on shoes because we have a $10 rewards card about to expire when we would have just been able to just save that money for something else. So that's how I came up with splaving, is that that's really kind of, I think the best way to describe it is that if you weren't even going to buy it in the first place, then you're splaving.
It's kind of like one of those top 10 oxymorons, the financial oxymorons I talked about in the last episode. You know, it's how we justify purchasing something we don't need because it was on sale. That just drives me crazy. Oh, look, honey, it's on sale. Let's buy it. No, that's not the way you go out and buy stuff.
Precisely, precisely. And I mean, I love shopping for clothes. Like I do. That's one of my passions. But I really just try, when I go shopping for clothes, I really try to make sure it's something that I really am in the market for, and try not to just buy, you know, impulse purchases or, oh yeah, it's on a sale. Let's buy it.
Well, let me ask you one last question, Kai. I want to see if you can give my listener one last piece of advice that might help them along their journey to debt freedom. What is the one thing that you could leave them with you think that would make the biggest impact on their ultimate finances?
I would say start small. You know, don't overwhelm yourself. So don't try to say, oh, I want to save $2,000 in 2 months. Start small and, you know, do auto deposit $10 every week. Start at $10 and start small. And I think that just making those small steps and, you know, and putting in an interest-bearing account, by the way, so you can see your money work for you, I think that's really the best advice I can give. It's just, if you're not a saver, start small.
Very good. Well, Kai Yanez, she is a financial coach from thevaultkey.com. Thanks for coming on the Money Plan SOS podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Steve, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Kai practices financial coaching in the Tampa Bay area, and you can find more about her at her website, thevaultkey.com, or find her on Twitter at thevaultkeyllc. Do you dream about working for yourself one day? Do you have an idea that you think would really serve others? Do you want to get rid of the shackles of corporate America and take your idea and go pro? Then you need to spend one day and invest in yourself. It's the Midwest Mastermind at MidwestMastermind.com. I have been blessed by working with some really incredible people in my mastermind group, and we're going to come together with 29 of what will become your closest friends for one day in Indianapolis on August 15th. It's the Midwest Mastermind event hosted by yours truly, branding expert Ryan Roten, WordPress guru Dustin Hartzler, and social media examiners Eric Fisher. Your admission ticket provides you with a guaranteed spot on the hot seat, focused attention on your idea, your branding, your website, and a list of targeted actions that you can immediately implement once you get home. Get your early bird tickets before July 31st for only $97. That includes breakfast, lunch, beverages, and snacks throughout the day, bonuses, and this one-day exclusive event that will include you and the business or the idea that you are passionate about. Solving problems is a team sport. MidwestMastermind.com. Are you ready to grow your business? Okay, I admit it. I can't live without my smartphone. This is from an article that I wrote for LibertyInvestor.com. I can't live without my smartphone. It started out so innocently. We needed phones in case our daughter was hurt or if our car broke down. Then back in about 2005, all we needed was a dial tone from a device that wasn't necessarily connected to the kitchen wall. But today, our devices allow my entire family, including long-lost relatives, to reach me at a moment's notice for about $162 a month. It didn't used to be that expensive. My wife, when she started out with a smartphone, actually it wasn't even a smartphone, it was a dumb phone. It was $30 a month for 100 minutes of calling time, and she barely even used it. Yeah, but if you look back, I mean, those were the good old days. But then we discovered texting, which had its own free structure and usage limits. So over time, the old hardware was traded in for greater battery life and a crystal clear screen. What began as simple wireless devices evolved into super fast connections to anyone and everyone in the world. And I love it. I think it was LL Cool J that said it best. My smartphone, believe me, I like it close. I'm the man with the text that can rock a post. Walking down the street to the hardcore beat while my iPhone 6 vibrates the tweet tweet. I'm sorry if you can't understand, but I need a smartphone inside my hand. Don't mean to insult other citizens when I chat in the stalls. It shouldn't offend. Okay, I embellished the words a tiny little bit, but someone could do a remix and lay down a new track to make this an instant hit if they wanted to. Give me a second to let this track finish up. And I'm finding that life is so much better with a smartphone. It's my scheduler and my note taker. I can communicate with anyone in the world instantly through Facebook and Twitter. At this point, our shiny devices are ingrained in our normal workflow of life. I can't imagine what I'd do at networking events without the ability to send my electronic business card to their smartphone via an SMS message. Or, you know, there's so many reasons for me to keep this thing around. I can't live without my smartphone. I'm sure that we could find better things to do with $162 a month than give it to the phone company. I'm just not sure that I want to. Yeah, I could learn to carry a pad of 3x5 cards in my pocket. It would force me to memorize phone numbers again. I'd also have to stash some quarters away in my pocket for when I need to make an emergency phone. Wait a minute. It doesn't work because there's hardly any payphones left. I guess that settles it. I have to keep my smartphone. You're probably sitting there wondering what this really has to do with money other than $162 a month. Well, this actually was a trick. Well, most of this was actually a personal testimony. I'm putting it in this episode to expose the way that we justify our desires for luxury items to the detriment of our personal finances. Is a smartphone bill bad for your finances? I'm not saying that, but we train ourselves to need things that really aren't important. Come on, admit it. A smartphone really isn't that important when you break it down. It's wonderful. It's like I said, I really feel like I can't live without it, but it's really not important. Does that mean you should go out and get a burner phone or cut the cable down to basic? Well, maybe, not necessarily. I mean, the answer really depends on your personal finances. Are you reaching your financial goals of saving, investing, paying off debt? That's really where it comes down to. Where does a smartphone fall into your list of goals? I went into much more depth on this in a recent webinar called Spending Our Values. You can find that at moneyplansos.com/webinar. But to find out how valuable it is to keep a smartphone around or a cable package or a wine of the month membership, then I'll ask you to take a moment to sit down with a sheet of paper. Make a list of everything that you spend money on within a typical month. Then rewrite that list in order of importance. Food is most important. Then things like housing and utilities, transportation, etc. Then write down how much you spend or expect to spend on each item and start subtracting the expenses from your monthly take-home pay. Determine how far down that list you can go before the money runs out, and that's going to tell you if you can afford a smartphone, or how much of a smartphone, or cable package, or wine of the month club you can afford. Going through that exercise will help you to create a prioritized spending list, and if you ran out of money before getting to the Caribbean cruise on your list, then you got to ask yourself if that's okay, or future car maintenance expenses, or emergency fund savings, or retirement. If those things are down on the list and you're okay with that, then be okay with that. That's fine. If you're not okay with that, then are there ways that we can decrease some of the expenses way up on top of that list? Are there things that we can do to increase the household's income? But if something of more importance is not reached, if it's too low below that line that we can't get to it, then the household spending does not reflect your values. So let's sum it up. And we'll use my example of us spending $162 a month on our cell phone bill. Creating a prioritized spending list like the one I just described is going to help us to realize how badly we want something versus how much we truly need something. And as an added extra special important bonus from doing this entire exercise, we will be better prepared to make changes when the iPhone 7 comes out. What I just described to you in that previous segment is a very brief description on how my signature budgeting process works. Look, there are tons of budgeting systems out there, and many of them are free. But I've yet to find one that does what my process does. It boils everything down to the very bare basics, and it fosters communication between you and your spouse, not just about money, but about your life and your goals. Why don't you go ahead and give it a try? Try out my virtual budget coaching course. Give it 1 hour. That's all it takes to get through a good majority of the process and go through it with your spouse. If by the end you are not 100% satisfied that this has somehow improved your relationship, then I'll give you your money back. Go to moneyplansos.com/start and get started today. Once again, that's moneyplansos.com/start. This is a segment called Panda from the Honda. Thoughts that I have while driving my $4,000 paid for with cash used Honda Civic.
Starting route to Arrowhead Stadium. In half a mile, turn left onto Cave Springs Road.
I'd be curious to see how much time you spend on your finances every week. If you're a listener to the show, I'll bet you spend the appropriate amount of time. But what amazes me is there's time that say, well, you know, I don't budget because, and they fill in the blank and all this stuff. But they'll spend time doing other things. Researching credit cards to find out which one will be the best for them to do their travel hacking. Which one gives them the best cash back. Well, if you've got time to research credit cards, or worse, what I got to do to build my credit, then you've got time to budget and get your assets in line. If you only had time for one or the other, working on your budget and your spending plan versus researching credit cards and the best, you know, way to build your credit, then why not focus on the one that keeps you out of debt? Why would you focus on the one that puts you into debt? Don't focus on that one. Instead, pay attention to the one that helps build wealth and focuses on financial security. I remember hearing a story about Walt Disney, or at least Disney Parks. They spent a lot of time and energy studying the behavior of visitors. I mean, they spent a lot of effort to do this thing. They went as far as figuring out how far apart they should place the trash cans. Walt Disney Parks, they know just how far you will walk before giving up and throwing trash on the floor. They know exactly how far you go, so they place the cans apart, you know, in certain places, a certain amount. It's amazing how much effort and time they spent trying to figure out, you know, at what point does someone give up and they just throw the stuff in the ground? Or how convenient do we have to make it so they never even consider it? It's just automatically, as soon as they're ready, there's a can standing there. It's kind of creepy, isn't it? It's also kind of brilliant, isn't it? Well, what if we just spent a few minutes every week thinking about our finances? That's another one of the reasons why I do this show. I want you thinking about money. I want you thinking about the ins and outs, the pros and cons, the ways that things can work, the ways that things don't work, what's best for you. I want you thinking about it. Because if you're not thinking about it, you're going to end up like a bunch of other people. Well, I didn't know any better, so I just leased a car because the payment was low. Ouch. Well, I was 19 and, you know, every student has to have a loan. Ugh. Well, credit cards are for emergencies. No, nothing like that, you know. So pay attention to that thing. What would happen if you just spent a few minutes every week thinking about your finances? Bills would be paid early, not just on time. Money would be deposited into savings. Informed decisions could be made about investment choices.
not just blindly throwing money into a 401k, but informed decisions. Credit worthiness, believe it or not, would be improved. That's not a build your credit thing. Your credit's going to get, it's going to improve. Your credit worthiness is going to improve just by focusing on the day-to-day purchases that you make and staying out of debt. Lower cell phone contracts. The holes in your budget would surface. They'd be uncovered, which then allows you to work on them. But ultimately, by focusing a little bit of time every week on your finances, goals would be reached. And certainly wealth would be built. I mean, isn't that what we should be spending our time on? I think so. Spend a little bit of time on your budget every week. Before you spend money, take a look at your budget. Make sure the money is there. That keeps you on track. You'll spend more efficiently. And you'll get ahead financially. You'll win financially. We've proven it. We do it at our house. I got three ways I can help you with this if you need it. One, I've got the budgeting course. Or, of course, there's always this free audio content. There's the podcast. You can listen to this show. I know that this show is going to be retired and a new show is going to be launched in the fall or the winter of this year. So there's going to be a way for you to continue keeping in touch with a debt-free mindset. And then finally, if you want, I'm here, one-on-one coaching. Just go to my website. There's a link in the show notes. Go to the website. You can hire me for one-on-one coaching. Call me for a free consultation. You can schedule an appointment right from the coaching page. If you want some one-on-one help to get your stuff organized, give me a call. But spend a little bit of time, at least more than what you had been, on the right things that will improve your finances and help you win with money.
In a quarter mile, turn right onto Youngerman Road.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I really, really appreciate you listening. I hope you spend some time focusing on your finances so you can improve your financial position. Links to everything we talked about here in the show today will be found right there on your smartphone. Just hit the show notes, they're there. Or visit moneyplansos.com/192. It's there that you'll find links to connect with Kai Yanez, a link to buy your ticket for Midwest Mastermind at midwestmastermind.com, and of course ways to contact me for your free 30-minute consultation. No credit card necessary, of course. MoneyPlanSOS.com/192. God bless you. Have a great week and pay attention, not interest.